Time magazine calls Pose one of the best TV shows of the year, and much to the relief of everyone, was renewed for a third season. Created by Glee and American Horror Story producer Ryan Murphy, Pose delivers Shakespearean levels of drama, set in New York City's ball scene, documented in the film Paris is Burning.
Pose stars an unprecedented cast of queer and trans actors of color, playing characters challenged by poverty, racism, and the AIDS crisis, while putting on outrageous balls with exquisite fashion and unparalleled dance moves. But just how much does Pose reflect the life and times of the people who lived through it?
Today, vivacious club legend and RuPaul's Drag Race superstar joins us to take a look at Pose and how Madonna's Vogue impacted queer performers of color in New York City.
Plus, Wig, the documentary featuring
Lady Bunny,
premieres on HBO.
Monkeys spliced with human DNA in China could lead to the planet of the Shady Apes.
The Running Butthole Challenge takes off on Twitter.
And Scissor Sisters' Jake Shears admits that the success of Let's Have a Kiki, which was written by Animatronic, broke up the group. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce, fabulous people like you. You, darlings, give us life.
Listen to the after show at patreon.com/feastoffun.
Oh, she... You beat me to it.
Are you having problems with your blinds over there? What's going on?
Is everyone dead yet?
You slayed me.
Yes, bitch.
Just like the queens on Pose, now on FX. Mm-hmm. Yes, mother.
Honey. So I must apologize from the beginning because at some point I'm going to have to walk away from the phone or bring the phone with me. I think I told you last night that I was going to be up making costumes.
Yes.
Right. Since I just got up a while ago and I'm continuing with the patterning, et cetera, I couldn't miss the lunch deal from the Japanese store, so I ordered food.
Ooh, what'd you order?
Cream of Samyang guy. Oh. He'll be coming here to ring the bell, so I'm going to have to walk to the door and go,
Oh, I thought you were going to order some Tu Wong Fu.
Tu Wong who?
Tu Wong Fu.
Have you seen this thing with Justin Bieber? He's challenging Tom Cruise to a fight. So now people on the internet are saying it's like, subtract 31 from the year you were born and then challenge that person to a fight.
Right.
So for me, it would be a duking it out with Martha Stewart or Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm. or if you subtract it from your physical age, you would then be fighting like an 8-year-old.
I looked up like the people who would be 31 years older than you, but they're all dead. So you already won the fight.
Oh, so Mark, we're still on that, are we? We talked about this last night.
Well, so we're really excited about season 2 of Pose, and we wanted to get somebody on the show who's sort of seen the you know, New York City's ballroom, the drag, the transgender, the queer performance communities evolve over the decades, and that would be you. You've been there watching all this unfold.
Yes, as a matter of fact, New Wave Chola, which is one of the children from Drag Race, she is one of the, she helps do the editing and all of that stuff. She just posted a small video clip for next week, and turns out my neighbor Peppermint is in next week's episode.
Ooh. So
that's motherfucking major.
So there's a lot major. Of RuPaul connections there, right? Peppermint, Jiggly Caliente, is in it.
Well, this is what I do know this has nothing to do with them. This is what I do know. I mean, if you know the original thing, it was RuPaul had initially hinted about 2 years before that she was actually going to be doing something like Pose. And according to the rumors in Hollywood, Miss Thing, else somebody else decided, since RuPaul was so, you know, caught up with what she was trying to do, that they jumped on it and here Pose came. So they literally kind of snatched her idea, because when we were in LA filming for All Stars, I think it was 2 or 3, RuPaul had pulled aside Mariah Balenciaga and myself to help her. So you know the song Call Her Mother, where she was coming up with the different categories? That was because when we were doing a filming with her, she was asking us to call out these different categories that would happen in a ball, and then everything got implemented in the next DragCon that happened in LA and New York simultaneously, so they could feel out the energy from it. But then she made her track and put all of that stuff in there, had Juana Lord do it. And so she was already working towards getting something like Pose done, and then somebody came and snatched it right from under her, because I think in RuPaul's way, she probably would have, you know, I don't know. I think for Ryan Murphy and them, they did the right thing by going directly to the physical source of where this comes from, instead of going, let me try to do it myself my way, you know. And so this gives it a much more thicker authenticity. I don't know if, you know, it's not to throw any type of, you know, shade. I don't know if World of Wonder would have been able to encompass stuff like this, you know, because, I mean, think about it. Episode 1 of season 2 starts out with them on a boat, slowly trudging across to get to Heart Island to go and see his ex-boyfriend who passed away, who's put in an unnamed pine box and covered over. And then, you know, the only memorial that they have is to buy a stone that is heart-shaped and write his name on it and put it down on the ground as the only memorial. And as you can see when it pans out, how many people have passed, you know, I don't know if they would have went that route, but thank God Ryan Murphy is here to get that job done. And we're living vicariously through these authentic stories and truths, you know, so this is all beautiful.
Now, with Heart Island, that is a place, that's right next to...
Huh? Yeah, that's where Mark grew up. Yes, bitch. I told you.
Wait. Let's explain to the listener. So Heart Island is an island. I guess that used to be a military training place, and then in the 1980s or before that, that New York would send unclaimed bodies to be buried there.
Yes, it's New York's version of Potter's Field, but in this case, more so or less, it was more for diseases or anything that was so unknown to the medical and clerical profession that they're like, put it over there.
And I was joking, because you're opening for Alaska Thunderfuck at World Pride, and I was just like, it's so nice that you'll be performing at Heart Island, and you were like, I'm gonna kill you.
Bitch, you got some damn nerve. First of all, it's called the Barclays Center. It's nowhere close or adjacent to Miss Heart Island. And so that's going to be actually a lot of fun. At the current moment, I know the section where I'm coming in, but right now I'm trying to learn 3 different shows simultaneously. So once I get through these first 2, then I will turn all my attention on Alaska, which might happen by this Saturday, in terms of learn the rest of the words to her track, so that if they call me in for an earlier section, I'm not sitting there going, oh girl, I don't know what this song is. Yes, they've, you know, so I now have to start concentrating on learning her song. But I know what section that where it says do the vivacious and get to that section.
Now, Heart Island is close to where Coco Peru grew up. Amazingly, City Island and Heart Island are just like are twin islands.
She probably saw bodies wash up on the shore.
Yes, they are. Yeah. And here's the funny part. City Island is where right now a lot of straights go and do EDM dance festivals. Meanwhile, next door is a place of, you know,
a very gloomy place. Yeah.
Ancestry.
Can you go visit Heart Island?
Yes, I went to visit you, but they said they already burnt you and threw you upside down. They were like,
just for the record, all that shade that Vivacious is throwing at Mark was initiated by Mark yesterday.
Ladies and gentlemen, last night, after having what year is this? 2019. After having five glorious honeymoon years with Mr. Mark, he's decided that the library should be opened in my direction. And I don't know where that came from. It's never happened before. And I warned him last night if he was going to do this again, and he started up his summation with a javel. So, bitch, I'm here with boulders.
Well, did you hear about that one girl? There was an article that was passed around in The Guardian about this girl who, she's in her 40s or something, or 50s now, and she was doing, you know how they have those sports days in high school where everybody gets together and do like sports and field days, that kind of stuff. And so she threw the javelin, right? And then she threw the javelin and then it hit somebody, and it hit this woman, a girl in her class, and it ended up killing her.
And
she struggled with it like the rest of her life, because she always felt really, you know, she knew it wasn't her fault. But of course, when you murder somebody by mistake, it's going to affect you.
I'm going to die, I want to die from javelin. Just say.
We can make it happen.
Accidental javelin.
We'll go to Heart Island and we'll see who survives.
I hear you're opening for World Pride on Heart Island. That's such a good read, though, for anybody. Now, Vivacious, with the voguing, with the ballroom scene in New York City, how accurate is Pose in terms of, like, the rivalry between the different houses?
Okay, so there's a reason why Vivacious is ballroom scene adjacent.
Yeah.
And not a part of it. So let me tell you something. Up until when Willie Ninja died a few years ago, I think this might now be the 10th or the 8th year of his passing, or the 6th. I need to check the records. Mark, could you please check on that for me, please?
He died in 2006.
No. Okay. So he could not have died. We met him.
Okay. Could you please? In September 2nd, 2006. Mark, we met him before that.
Oh, wow. So we met him just before he died. Then.
Yeah.
So up until when Willie Ninja died, the voguing scene was the most, it was so shady, not even the devil would fucking show up.
The devil would not show up because it was so shady. What do you mean by that?
You come out as a gay boy and all these houses are trying to, hey, you should join us. Hey, you should join us. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. The only house that didn't really poach people to join them was probably La Beja. Extravaganza.
Willie was very old, right? The House of Libation, wasn't she the first house?
Not sure, but Willie was doing this way before all those houses existed. There's an old video clip with Willie Ninja and Demon Carr. His name is Demon Carr on Instagram, but his name is Archie Ninja, and he's actually the great-great-grandfather of the House of Ninja. And they were doing voguing probably about 15 years before voguing became an art form. And so they're really the real ones who started all of this. I know some people are like, oh no, girl, it happened when the house is, I'm like, honey, if you look at Willie's old videos, you can see them. I would love to find one of them, because it runs chills through your bones to realize that they were onto something before Vogue became Vogue.
Now, just for the record, Willie Ninja's House of Ninja and the House of Extravaganza were both founded in the same year, 1982, and were very noteworthy in the sense that a lot of the members of the houses were recognized internationally, were in films and in the press, but more importantly, they had a very racially diverse house. In the past, before 1982, a lot of the houses were either all Latino or all African-American.
The House of Extravaganza really mostly like to feature only Spanish folks, and it might go back to that way now. It's because Hector Extravaganza passed away about 5 months ago, and he is the founder of the House of Extravaganza. He is the grandfather of the house, and he passed away. And those underneath him never liked the fact that he was half white and half black. He was half Spanish and half black, and he allowed both races to be inside the house. The other people in the house do not like the fact that there were blacks in the house. They only wanted to be Latinos. And so now that Miss Thing, who used to be on Vogue, who used to be one of Madonna's dancers, is now the head person in charge by elimination of Hector's passing, I think the house is going to revert to going back to only being a Spanish thing, which is sad. I believe in inclusion when it comes to that stuff. But back to your question of where the house is shady. The reason why I am ballroom adjacent is because they were so shady that if you pick one house, the other houses would try to beat you up either before the ball, at the ball, at the next club you went to, because you weren't in their house, or just throw you shade day and night walking down the street anywhere. That's the reason why when you meet a real old school queen, the reason why you cannot shake them or shook them, as the new word would try to use, is because, you know, this new generation of gays, their skins are so sensitive. They get freaked out when somebody says the word faggot. They get freaked out over the word tranny and everything else. Sweetie, back then, reading is what gave you the real thick skin of Godzilla. Not even a dinosaur. We're talking Godzilla that can stop a nuclear blast, that when you throw words at them, they know how to turn it around in less than 2.5 seconds and light you up as daylight, in terms of reading you so badly you wish if you were back to being an embryo inside your mother's uterus.
Well, I remember when I first moved to Chicago in 95, I worked at Michael Jordan's restaurant, and a lot of black people I worked with, and we were talking about the ball scene here in Chicago, because I had seen Paris is Burning. I was like, oh, I want to go hang out and see the ball scene here. And they just looked at me. He's like, no, you don't. And I'm like, why not? And they're like, well, first of all, the show start at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they're in some kind of like undisclosed location on the south side of Chicago. It might be, you know, in some restaurant or a club or something like that. You don't know. And the next thing you know, you're going to get knifed if you go there, or shot or killed. I'm like, why? I'm like, because it gets very violent.
Yes.
And if you're not part of that community, if they don't know
if you're not a part of that outsider, community. Right. Yeah. Yes. The only way you could be invited to a ball is if somebody from a house brings you to a ball. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, you don't see white people showing up going, oh, my God, because technically speaking, everybody in the house would beat the shit out of them right then and there. Because it's our community. We're not about all that extra. We're not here for somebody's show and tell, you know. That's why even the other day when there was this white choreographer in L.A. who tried to use ballroom as a category for something he was doing, everybody ranging from New York to Europe went on that guy's social media page and destroyed him so badly he had a cancer. Because, you know, a lot of people think that they can try to come into this ballroom scene and exploit it. These children are not playing that game.
So in terms of Pose, the TV show, the relationship between the houses is actually much more friendlier in on the TV show than it was in real life, and much more diverse.
Yes. The TV show puts a nicer spin. So what happened is this. Willy's Ninja's death was the proof that we were not all invincible.
Yeah.
And at that point, it then made houses started to realize, girl, what started the epidemic from then, you know, is still going. And a lot of us have our patient zero. A lot of them from back then that are still alive are patient zero, in terms of they have the original strain and they're living with it and it's not bothering them.
Why are you giggling, Mark?
This is nothing to laugh about in that sense.
However,
Willie's death proved that, you know, we can pass away. Mm-hmm. And so it made the houses reconsider the ethics of shade towards other houses. And it was only Willie's death that prompted houses to be more friendly towards each other, because before then it was shady. Like, I would never join a house because I used to see this queen would join one and his best friend would join the other. And by the next week they came to the tunnel or the sound factory, they were not friends anymore and could not speak to each other anymore because they were now enemies for life.
It's like Romeo and Juliet.
You know, and I'm talking, yeah. You know, and even when I used to go to a club in Queens called Crash, which was a Spanish Latin/black club, you know, the different houses would be there because they'd be coming from a different ball. And this is where they would hang out for the rest of the night, or they would use Crash as their practice, their stomping ground to practice on what they needed for the ballroom scene. When you walked outside, you know, there were queens, since they knew that security highly searched at the door, there were queens who would then run up to like a light pole and climb up to the top of the walk box, because that's where they left their knife. That's where they left their razor blades. A lot of these queens used to travel with two razor blades in their mouth at a time.
So Candy and Electra sort of having a knife and a hammer fight and pulling those weapons out of their costumes. This is a spoiler.
That is real. That is real. That is real.
They would have had those weapons nearby to be able to whip them out of the moment's notice.
Yes, because some of them know how to get these things into the building, or, you know, have a security guard friend who could get it in for them, you know, and it's a matter of, is there violence or is there not violence?
Now, Vivacious, you know, how did these houses, but, how did they make money, or how did they fund a lot of the costumes? Because it seems like everybody's just walking in and out of the shows and not paying a cover at door, and seems like they order drinks and there's no money being exchanged at all.
You don't see them making the costumes. They're
not showing that in Pose, but yes. So every time that there is a ball, the categories are put forward. Uh-huh. And think about it. If you have, let's say 500 people showing up, or 1,000, each category is X, Y, and Z. The admission price is $5, $10, or $15. You put that $15 aside towards that. You know, that money also then goes towards, let's say, to get the trophies bought, et cetera. That's going to be at the ball. But they're selling drinks there, so they're making money from that. People are getting paid, but also a lot of that money is also being pushed over to the next ball.
People who are living in sort of abject poverty or, you know, on welfare, how are they affording all these extravagant costumes?
Darling, almost everyone in the ballroom scene knows how to create from creativity. That's who we are.
So a lot of it is just assembling things, from scratch, from recycling.
You make it, you steal it, exchange sex for money and you buy it.
But and part of it was like people wanted to participate in these balls in order to win trophies, but also, what was in it for them? Like, what was at stake to do well in a ball?
The prestige of knowing that you're better than is what you have that name. Because at the end of it, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race has forced a lot of these little young children to keep using the word iconic. Mm-hmm. And they need to stop using the word, because it's being taken out of context. It's taken out of the wrong degree of how it should be used. For instance, these children in the Vogue and ballroom scene are in that scene to move forward to later on to become an icon. You don't get the word icon in 5 years. You don't get the word icon in 10 years. You get that word icon in 15, 25, maybe 30 years later, in terms of them recognizing you as such. As by the time you have the status of icon, it doesn't even matter if you Vogue still or don't Vogue or can't Vogue. Well, you would have to know how to Vogue. But for the fact that you've already put in your dues in terms of the amount of times you've won trophies over the years, and your style is the word, as Puff Daddy would use, would be unfuckwithable in terms of how tight you are in your execution. You gain that status over time. And so when they do have some of these balls, you will see the older generations come up and walk. And it doesn't matter if they're just walking or decide to Vogue or not. They will just automatically get tens, because they have earned the status of icon, being putting in that hard work for many, 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 many years. So that's why I take offense to the word iconic being thrown around by these younger Drag Race children, because it has a different meaning in the ballroom scene.
Now, season two of Pose takes place about a couple years into the future, where the ballroom scene...
A couple years? Really?
I'm reading a press release here. Oh. Okay. So Pose takes place a couple years into the future, where Madonna's sensation of Vogue is affecting the community. And a lot of the people in the community are actually having the expectations that they're going to make it mainstream. In terms of the impact of Madonna's success of Vogue and the, you know, Willy Ninja being seen as a major, you know, dancing figure in American popular culture. What was the effect of Vogue for you and your friends at that time period?
You know, Vogue was kind of like a part of our mini Bible. What do I mean by that? It became a lexicon in terms of, you know, here you have to remember, by the time Vogue came out and the first video, we got to see House Children, Jose Extravaganza, Vogan, and a whole bunch of others from that house. You know, so for the first time in history, we saw a part of ourselves being put with somebody bigger and larger than life than us.
Was it a similar reaction to RuPaul's Drag Race is having today, where people sort of thought about drag or entertainment as more of a something to fulfill their lives, and now they're seeing it as kind of a potential career move for themselves?
Before that, I would go back to RuPaul herself doing Supermodel of the World. Supermodel of the World represented us as a gay community going, oh my God, a drag queen actually made it. You know, and RuPaul doing that back then is what made me want to dig deeper into my drag in terms of I have a unique style and I'm going to keep pushing that and pushing that and pushing that and pushing that. And before Drag Race, I was traveling the planet, you know, working in all these different places. But then the show came along and, you know, these places was like, well, we don't want to hire people anymore if they're not on Drag Race. And I'm like, bitch, we've been bringing you revenue for 17 years. All of a sudden, now you want to be shady like this just because a TV show came out. So you can imagine the detriment to all the older queens who have been around my age that has been doing this for years, making a name for themselves globally, now being cut short in the prime of their achievements, being told, we don't want to hire you anymore because a TV show came out.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of established drag queens, you know, very famous drag queens, I'm not going to say their names because I respect their privacy, but have auditioned to be on RuPaul's Drag Race and have been rejected. And part of it is the show at this point wants people, there's ageism, but it also wants people who are relatively undiscovered.
Right. Well, guess what? Okay, you want people undiscovered, but in the process, those undiscovered people that you're putting out into the universe aren't doing the justice of drag properly to make this a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, some people might get offended because I said that. Too bad. You know, a lot of people are just trying to do drag these days just because, hey, it's going to get me on TV. In the process, they are destroying the worth of drag. You know, every day, 900 new AMDA student and 900 new theater students, instead of trying to hone their craft to get to Broadway, they graduate, pay $80,000 to learn theater to come and do drag. And then they're so thirsty for work that, you know, the scene has now gotten to the point where they are $25, $50 and $75 queens because of all these musical theater people just messing up what drag used to be. The older girls who used to be in charge of this scene, and when I mean older girls, the showgirls, the trans ladies who used to be in charge of all these clubs before RuPaul's Drag Race, made sure that no matter if you were a trans performer, which is a showgirl, or a drag queen, they made sure that you were rotated around to every single club and you would not work at the same club week after week so that you could become a stronger queen to work with other people and pull from their energies, experiences to become a more stronger home queen. And now if you look at the scene right now, it's the same five ugly bitches in the same five ugly clubs every Tuesday, every Wednesday, every Thursday. And it
same
doesn't
five
grow
ugly
because
bitches in the same five ugly clubs.
These girls are doing the same numbers week after week after week. You know, when you work around other people, it forces you to take on some of their characteristics to make you a stronger queen. That's why at one point I sent a message to Drag Race and going, you don't need to book nobody else from New York, because if you see five of the main queens from New York, all the rest of them kind of perform like them. It's like a cookie cutter. If you keep seeing them every week and they're doing the same thing, there is no growth in drag. But when the older trans ladies were in charge of the scene, everybody was rotated around all across the boroughs so that you could work with other queens and other drag queens to see how they do it to fix your drag and improve what you do as a performer. And that's how I came to be, and that's how many came to be.
Now, in December of 1989, ACT UP famously, notoriously held a protest, a die-in at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City, where they disrupted the mass taking place and drawing attention to the Catholic Church's abstinence-only stance, which they still have to this day, and yelling at the church, AIDS is a disaster, people die faster, and sort of things. And these activists today are very critical of Poe's because they're saying that the majority of people who participated in that action were people from the ballroom scene, or at least the ones that are featured in Poe's. And they say that the series does a disservice to sort of showing who actually participated and why in that action.
I don't think Poe's did a disservice. You got to remember this.
Mm-hmm.
Poe's isn't trying to film the original people that were in ACT UP. This is a TV show with new actors to give a new air of information in authenticity.
Part of it is, I think, is the danger of a fictional television show, which we know I absolutely adore Pose. And I think it's wonderful to see some of these iconic moments in Queer Nation and ACT UP in our very sexy, very complicated, very brave activist history being portrayed on television. So for audiences to get excited about our history, but more importantly, to participate in our politics. And a friend of mine said that actually Dominique Jackson's character of Electra Abundance saying, "Hell no, I wouldn't be caught dead in that scene," was much more the sentiment that a lot of the ballroom queens had about ACT UP at the time.
Yes, that is true also, because, you know, to go to St. Patrick's Cathedral and, you know, put yourself in a position like that. You know, not everybody wants to face the fact that you want people to know that this is affecting you directly. It takes a lot of strength, courage, and internal fortitude to walk into a place such as a church and throw yourself on the ground and go, "You're killing me."
Well, a lot of the people who participated in those actions also had the resources, either with ACT UP or their own families, to have lawyers or to be bailed out of jail. And if you're a person who's marginalized, being arrested in a demonstration is not as easy.
You won't have that money. It's true. Yes. So, yes, that is true. And so when that whole scene went down, I remember that whole scene as clear as day. That queen, who they call a pope, he sat down on that, he sat down on his chair and he turned sideways with his hand over his head, one hand, and he had his other hand. You know, like how you would shoo away a fly?
Yeah.
And that's what he was doing with his hand back then to tell the police to get rid of them and get them out of his church. And, you know, they had the Catholic Church back then were doing everything on a week to the Catholic Church on their own came out every week with their own update to the news to make life a living hell for LGBT people and LGBT people with AIDS. They came out. It's like nobody asked them. They decided the church literally waged war. It got to the point where, you know, some of the ACT UP members literally started walking in the church and throwing their blood at them just to wake them up.
Well, I remember the very, very controversial, just somebody getting the communion wafer and crumbling in front of the bishop's face and like, take your religion and shove it up your ass kind of thing.
You know, it's a really that whole moment is a very triggered moment for a lot of people if you've lived through that era. You know, so I do understand where you might say some, but from what I've seen online, I have not yet to meet an actor person who was unhappy, because a lot of them are just even happy that it was even mentioned.
I'm really proud of the series, and I think it's a beautiful series, but I do understand the concern when fiction starts blurring history. And I just hope that a lot of people, you know, use the inspiration from Poe's to actually look into films like How to Survive a Plague that actually, you know, shows these actual individuals and how they responded to the AIDS crisis and transformed the world forever for the better.
But I do like the show and how it kind of takes like modern takes on things. And so, you know, it is a fantasy in many ways. So, you know, it takes place in the early 90s and then when she changed, spoiler alert, when, you know, Electra Abundance changes her house to the House of Windtour and says, Windtour is coming, you know? I mean, it's not something you would have said, like, in 1992 or
No, because it's a Game of Thrones reference.
Game of Thrones reference. Yeah. And right, so it's
that
nice
was a,
to be,
that was yeah. a Game of Thrones. That was a Game of Thrones reference. So, mm-hmm. yes, at that point, it's telling you it is pulling from the past and mm-hmm. also pulling from the current present, mm-hmm. you know? And it's, the whole idea is, it's kind of like, you know, the movie with the Central Park Five. Mm-hmm. The whole idea is we're going to show you what happened and we're going to let you see, you're going to have to now make up your own opinion, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and Pose is doing the same mm-hmm. thing because it's now letting people realize that Pose is literally making parents, what's going on Pose. These are issues that families have not discussed. Mm. And Pose is putting these things now in people's heads and minds going, oh, my God, we have to do better towards our children should they ever come out gay. Mm-hmm. You know, should they, you know, because you got to remember this. We are born gay, but it takes us a while to realize it because from the time you're 2-3 years old, the first thing that a straight person does is forces you. Where's your girlfriend? Where's your girlfriend? Mm-hmm. There's nobody saying to a boy, where's your boyfriend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're telling you what clothes to wear, who to like, all that kind of stuff.
Right. They're telling you what clothes, what color, and they're pushing all these straight heterotropes on you. And then in the process, you are subconsciously suppressing who you are. I knew I was gay from age 5. But guess what? It dawned on me on age 16. I remember one night I was sleeping. And I remember it happened 2 nights before where I woke up thinking about a boy and girl, child. There was a steel girder beam in the room. And I'm like, where did this come from? 2 days later, it happened again. And that's when it dawned on me at age 16. No, bitch, you're a flaming queen. And I literally woke up at 2:30 in the morning and I cried until 6:30.
Oh.
And went back to sleep because my mother's a minister. My father's a minister. I was on my way to theology school to become a minister just like them. And here they were telling me, flee ye youthful lust from the day I was born. My mother was reading Bible scriptures to me even before I was born in her womb. And so, you know, they wanted this Christ-like baby or whatever the hell they wanted it to be. And here I am at 16 realizing, oh, bitch, you was a corksucker, you know. So at that point, you know, you're like, how are you going to deal with this? And then 3 years later, you know, push came a shove to my parents. And she's like, are you gay? And I'm like, yes, I am. And she called the police to have them throw me out the house.
Mm. Damn. So in sense of the houses being, you know, assembled or of people who are sort of rejected by their families and the story of Angel played by
India Moore,
you know, is very much very, I'm sorry, Blanca Rodriguez's story played by MJ Rodriguez is very much, you know, them being thrown out of the house by the family and sort of putting together their own homes was very much a survival mechanism that took place and was able to take place in New York City because rental properties were so inexpensive at the time.
Yes, rental properties were very inexpensive, but, you know, there were also a few, you have to remember something. Mm-hmm. LGBT folks are the most arrogant when it comes to, I'm going to pursue the profession that's going to get me to maximize the most for what I want to be on the planet. If you look at most gays in terms of what job they're doing, they're not working at Burger King and want a $15 minimum wage as their new cap. They are going for the jugular in terms of what they want in life. They're going for that. They are going for that gig that gives them the most money. And so back then there were a few of our children who had steady jobs and they realized that, you know what? I don't make enough, but with I see other people mm-hmm. being homeless, I can use my position to help them not be homeless. And also they in the process also will contribute to the house. For instance, a friend of mine who helped me get on Drag Race, his name is Escada, Calvin Escada. He's from the House of Escada. He's the father of the house. He has one rule for all his kids. Well, he has a few rules. No drugs. go to school, get an education, get a job if you want to be in the house. So if you're not doing any of that, Escada is not keeping you in that house. You are chopped after probably a year or maybe 9 months. If he sees that you are not making an effort, if you just want to be, oh, girl, I'm here to lounge. He's like, bye, bitch.
You know, you've been chopped. They said no. Now, you know, you know the actress Dominique Jackson, who plays Electra Abundance, and you've known her for a number of years.
I've known her for many, many years, probably about 27, yes.
Almost 30 years.
Oh, you've known Vivacious, her. I see you're wearing your favorite lip gloss, Sperm.
Yes.
How much like the character Electra Abundance is Dominique Jackson?
She is nowhere close to that. First of all, Dominique is one of the most softest spoken human beings on the planet. It's the reason why so many people in the LGBT scene can relate to her at all times, because she's one of the most nicest people you've ever met. She will give the shirt off her back to you, but she will sit there before show and after show and speak to you for many hours. She don't mix, she don't mingle, she don't get in a drama, you know. But one thing that, you know, but for, you know, for many years, and as she said in a few of her interviews, you know, her and her family, they don't get along. Her situation is probably even worse than mine, and she also comes from a West Indian island, and so they don't feature her. So I think, you know, but also I know this much. The difference between most Jamaican families and mine is from a Christian background. Hers is, they are, you know, the ones who know about the church, but they don't practice it 24/7. My family practices that 24/7. So I think her family is coming around because in their eyes, they see ka-ching, ching, ching, as in, look upon that. Somebody in our family getting famous. Maybe we should act like we like them. You know,
well, yeah, listen, going on TV washes all the sins away, right?
Listen, put it this way. I think one of the main reasons why I probably got eliminated from Drag Race early is because part of the show said that they needed to call your family and have them speak to you. And I know for a fact that when they probably called my family, my mother probably cursed them the fuck out because she didn't see none of this.
You have to hire a Jamaican actress to pretend to be your mother next time.
I could do it over the phone.
Well, check this out.
I love my son. He's beautiful. He's on television.
Girl,
now.
That'll never happen when it comes to my
I love my son.
That'll never happen, sweetie.
Just give him my number.
Video.
Yeah. Oh shit.
I used to work. One of the first people that I worked for in New York City was a club promoter named Lee Chapel. L-E-E-C-H-A-P-P-E-L. You could look him up online. And many, many years ago, he called my house to speak to me. And when I came to the club that weekend, he just had this very evil energy towards me. And I didn't know why. But then he finally broke down after like 2 hours in of me being there and be like, you know, I called your house this weekend to speak to you. And your mother made me feel like I was 8 years old again.
Being
bullied for being gay, for being who I am. And I'm like, Lee, I am so, 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 so sorry. I said, Lee, you know, and at the time, I didn't fully come out yet. So he got an earful from my mother when it came to him talking like that on the phone, you know. So could you imagine if that happened to him, and he does live in my house? Imagine what happened to me.
So the phrase tens across the board that was used on season 10 on RuPaul's Drag Race, was that something that was pretty common in the Vogue, you know, the ballroom culture? Or is that something that the producers probably got from Pose?
Oh, sweetie, tens is...
it's as old as it comes, right?
Tens is as intrinsic as breathing.
Okay. So in terms of, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race season 11's off the air, you know, just looking back on it quickly.
Evie only won.
And that was good. You know, I'm glad that Evie won because I thought she was certainly one of the more interesting queens from the bunch of the season. I certainly, you know, really enjoyed Silky Ganache's shenanigans, even though she rubbed people quite the wrong way.
No. First of all, let me tell you something. Yeah. The only people that are bothered by Silky Nutmeg Ganache is white people. Just the same way, just as how 2 days ago, the writer for the show in Living Single, which featured Maxine Shaw at Large and Queen Latifah, they wanted to write Maxine Shaw out because they didn't like the fact that there was a loud, outspoken black girl who was on the show and who was a lawyer. See, the reason why folks are bothered about Silky is because there's three factors Silky has going against her. She's loud, she's black, and she's fat, and they can't handle it. Guess what? If you speak to anybody else from my community that's a person of color, they're like, bitch, do you?
Yeah, so, I'm kind of the same way. I'm just like, you listen, those cameras are on. Make hay while the sun shines, right?
Well, I literally told Silky Ganache, just like, if you get on the show and you want to make it far, you gotta let the people know why you want to be there. You know, in terms of vulnerability, it's all about motivation. We need to understand why you're doing these things. And I think in her sense, a lot of the action that she took in, you know, and when you're in that situation, sometimes you act out. Sometimes you get really nervous and you do and say things that later on you're like, you know, you're like, why did I even do that?
Well, I mean, think about it. They were trying to do the same thing to the Vixen, too. Sure. A lot of people, after she left the season, they didn't like her, the fact that she was outspoken. Guess what, bitch? We're going to continue being outspoken. First of all, you forgot that you took a whole bunch of people from a warrior class civilization to come over here to come pick some cotton for you. We did not forget who the hell we were. And after all them years of you pulling all of that stunt, you need to understand something. At no point are we running around with black anger, rage, killing people over X, Y, and Z because of what the white man did to us 400 years ago, and we're still suffering under its systemic system, but we will still be outspoken regardless.
There's a lot of different ways to react to being in those circumstances. And
a lot of people just want black people to nod their heads and go, yes. Well, guess what? We're not all here for that.
Well, so are you saying that someone like Peppermint, who's generally got along with people, is sort of a sellout? I mean, are you creating this like binary here?
Are you putting a connotation of a character assassination on Peppermint?
No, I'm saying that there's many ways react to that environment, and Peppermint's one way to react to it, and Silky's another, and Vixen's another.
Every person comes from a different part of a situation that makes them react to different situations. We all know that, you know, different places and different towns, people react based on how they were brought up.
And I think you and I are trying to say the same thing, is that when you're in that situation, you don't know how you're going to react. And so a lot of people need to cut some slack for people when they do or say things that may be off-putting.
No. It's not so much situation. You have to understand something. If you were never given a proper toolkit to work with, you won't know how to exercise those tools properly. And so when that happens, you are going to vent out of frustration.
Sure.
So, you know, Peppermint grew up in a different, I shouldn't say lifestyle, but in a different world where she knows how to handle those situations quite calmly. Same thing with Mayhem Miller, you know. Maybe not the same for Vixen, maybe not the same for other people that are very, bitch, I'm coming for the jugular for everything that you do. For instance, I know that neither one of y'all are trying to go up in those black areas of Chicago and try to have a conversation with none of those people, because every time when you turn on the news and you look into that area, they are fighting with the police and you're like, oh my God, I'm surprised nobody didn't drop an extermination something in this part of town. But it's because they don't know they don't have anything else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to remember this. In a lot of the black neighborhoods, think about it. Most black students don't even get to see a black male teacher as a role model to make them realize that I can do better than just being a thug. And also, blacks are forced and put into schools where it's a white teacher who's racist towards them, who will not give them the proper education that they need. You could say, Vi, that's wrong. You can't say that. I've been a victim of that system myself. However, from also, you know, having a very, a stabilized family home, and, you know, given education in previous years from junior high school and elementary school, it made me realize that what's happening around me, I will not let it define me to walk out there. there is no point in my life will I ever turn around and go blame the white man. No. If you want to blame the white man, you need to figure out and take what he's doing and use it as energy to make something more positive for yourself.
But you know what? It is really hard to have sex with somebody who's really entitled, who's really pushy, who's really bigoted, who's very racist. Mm. Even if you're not a recipient of that toxicity, just being around it can be very draining.
You can say that to the opposite side, too. You know, it's like if you're hanging out with, let's say, a black person who everything they want to say come out of their mouth is to blame it on a white person. It's like that becomes draining, too. Also,
so it's about finding solutions, not just defining the issue and talking about it.
Right. You know, there are tools around you at all times. It's up to you if you want to open up your eyes and your mind to use tools to get you to a better situation in life.
In that light, what do you make about RuPaul's new TV show? It's a pretty short run. And a couple of friends of mine actually say that this is like a marriage between The Ellen Show and Pee Wee's Playhouse. And the reason that they're saying that is because he has, instead of the word of the day, he has the sleigh of the day. Just like Pee Wee, a little robot comes out and tosses out a word and everybody screams real loud when he says it, you know.
You know, I haven't been able to watch it yet because I've been so busy trying to make costumes. And if I'm not doing that, my music is on to learn what I need to learn in terms of words for my next track. So in terms of TV, it's like I even had to put aside time last night just to watch Pose so we could even talk about it today. Mm-hmm. But I have not seen an episode yet. So I really do truly apologize. But from what I saw, it looks great. I personally have not seen anyone knocking the show at all online. I do read comments and I've seen everything positive so far in terms of, you know, everybody's very seems to be very happy that she has a new show.
Have you seen Strike a Pose, the documentary on Madonna's dancers, backup dancers? Because that's on Netflix now.
It's been out for a while. It's been out. No, I haven't seen it yet, but you have to remember, I grew up with a lot of them. So, but here's the thing, you know, I've spoken to those guys before in real life. And it's like, you know, some people over the years spread rumors that, oh, you know, they're angry at Madonna. And, you know, I remember even the other day when we had to do the thing with Katy Perry, Jose was there. And he goes, Vi, I didn't get here by being some ugly, negative, bitchy person.
Sure.
Trying to complain that Madonna did X, Y, and Z and screwed over my fucking life.
Mm.
You know? No, there's not a lot. You know, this is what, okay. So in what happened with Madonna is this, it's the same thing that happens right now. Yes, Madonna might've brought you into her world, but it is not Madonna's job to breastfeed you for the rest of her life.
She's got all those kids to feed too.
No, what I mean is in terms of dancers, etc. The reason why this was so new to them is because for the first time in history, a marginalized group was taken into a whirlwind world, used up, and then kind of discarded. That's because Madonna had already moved on. She wasn't doing Vogue anymore. She was moving on to Bedtime Stories, Frozen, and everything else. Where she's going has no place for where they still are. Does that make sense? So, you know, when somebody pulls you into their world, you still need to figure out what are your survival, coping, and mechanism skills to forward yourself. We're only learning this language now due to Drag Race that, you know, and also when you look at people that are doing Indiegogo and GoFundMes because they have an idea, the whole thing is, even though you have a product, the true strength is not the product that you came up with. It's what you need to do to keep it relevant after you've unfolded it to the world and to keep the interest of people buying it. But the same thing also happens when you become a dancer of Madonna. What do you do after this? You have to remember, Madonna was so far ahead of her time that by the time she unveiled Vogue and did everything that she did, the world they couldn't wrap their heads around what the hell. Madonna literally fast-forwarded the planet. She accelerated the planet on her own by doing that.
What was your reaction when you saw, like, the multiracial Latino, Asian, and African-American cast for Madonna's Blonde Ambition tour?
I lived.
because at the time period, a lot of like female entertainers, ensembles or backup dancer or backup vocalist, right, they were very much aligned with their appearance. And this was sort of, you know, Madonna. And in a lot of ways, visually, she stood out as this blonde, skinny young figure surrounded by all these, you know, luxurious, gorgeous dancers of color.
Well, you also have to remember something. This country deals with identity race. Mm-hmm. If you're white, you're going to stay with your white folks. If you're black, you're going to stay with your black. You have to understand, the LGBT community is not a race issue. The LGBT community is a spectrum thing. So there are blacks, whites, and this is the reason why the LGBT community scares straight folks, because for the first time in history, they can't pit one race against another, because I'm like, bitch, I don't see race. I see my brothers and sisters, and we identify as LGBT.
If you're in a mixed race relationship, one person's of different backgrounds, odds are you're more likely to be LGBT than you're not.
I guess so.
Yeah, it's we're more interracial in terms of our romantic sexual relationships than heterosexual people are.
Well, because as I said, you know, straight folks, they do everything. It's this race against that race. You can't use the word race in a LGBT context or concept, because we don't use race. We only identify as we are LGBT. So if I'm going to like a black man, I'm going to like a Chinese man, I'm going to like a Japanese man or some other race, it freaks out straight people, because, well, we were trying to get you to pit you against him so that I can be the one on top. But now you're telling me that you're here to destroy that. Mm-hmm. Also, in the straight community, you know, the straight community likes to use shaming to control things. Whereas in the gay community, we're like, bitch, I'm a suck dick and go sing a song tomorrow morning. Ha, eat them motherfucking apples. You know, and so think about Tiger Woods. When Tiger Woods cheated on his wife and they found out that he had multiple girlfriends, every corporation and news corporation was trying to call on people writing petitions to have all these corporations not support him anymore. And so, you know, in the gay community, we are like, oh, girl, you could go do porn and cheat on your boyfriend and still go and do that music video and do that music album. And we will not try to shame you into it. We're just going to go, hey, girl, you better work. And so for the fact that we don't use shame as a part of our vernacular and part of our lexicon for control, this scares them. And that's the reason why they can't take the LGBT community, because we represent a threat to them that they aren't ready to accept in any way, shape, mm-hmm. or form, because we're telling them that fuck your religion, fuck your Bible, fuck your beliefs. And we're just going to do everything out of love and also promoting and, you know, lifting up the next person for what they do, not taking them down.
Now, Pose is a TV show that relies on Shakespearean levels of drama to move the plot forward. And so it's inevitable that, you know, if one of the characters, God forbid, wants to leave the series and go on her own projects, they're just going to kill them off by saying they died of AIDS. So the question is, who? And this is a very dark question that does not need to be answered. Who's most likely to die from AIDS? Which character is most likely to be written off this season?
Well, I don't know if they're going to die from AIDS, but I think who's the Latina queen who's friends with Candy, she's going to get murdered in the back alley somewhere.
Because they have to draw the, you know, if you're really going to tell the story about the trans struggle in New York City in the late 80s, early 90s, you have to talk about HIV. You have to show someone dying of AIDS, which we did see. You know, Billy Porter's Pray Tell's partner died.
Right.
But, you know, we need to see violent. You know, they're going to show violence against trans women.
Someone's dying.
Someone's going to die.
Someone's getting murdered.
So far, they haven't shown a trans woman in a casket.
And they're going to. And that's going to fuck everybody's world.
It's going to happen. Yeah. And it is going to hit such a hard core in people's inner bodies. You have to understand, Pose right now, right? Curiosity is going to force straighten certain straight families to go and look at this show. And it's going to start an inner dialogue. It's kind of like what RuPaul did by her being so visible and also being, you know, with RuPaul's Drag Race. It's going to start an internal dialogue, but it's the same thing that drag queens do on a day-to-day basis. Straight folks don't like drag queens. They don't like gay people, but they see a drag queen and they're like, girl, I just saw a drag queen. How do I access and deal with this in my spirit, in my soul, etc.? And it forces them to have a dialogue. And so Pose is going to put this on that table. And I believe that Pose, more than Drag Race, will probably, it might help speed up the process of when people realize we've been doing a disservice to the LGBT community for too many years. Mm-hmm. We need to fix this problem soon. Because guess what's happening right now? Within the last 2 years, churches are becoming split on decisions because the younger generations are coming up and going, we don't want anything to do with your church because you preach hate. And Kirk Franklin, which is a pastor for one of these big black churches, he just made a comment the other day going, y'all are being too vicious on the gays and it's costing you people in the church. The next generation has wants nothing to do with them. You have to remember this. If the next generation starts to leave the church, once those old people are old, what money is coming in? That church is done.
Well, the old people will die and leave their money to the church.
Yeah. The Catholic Church spent millions of dollars fighting against, bribing politicians to allow them to cover up the crime of molesting children.
But imagine if everybody cold turkey tomorrow morning decided, I'm not giving you shit no more, and I'm turning my back, and you will not see me in your church. It means then that for the next few years, instead of them getting money from people during services to pay for the rent, they're not going to have to dip into their bank account to keep that building open.
Yeah. So what about the relationship between Damon and Ricky? They're the young black couple who we're starting to see, friction. We don't want to give it away if you haven't watched the series, but Mark predicted that this season, one of them, Dylan's character, I'm sorry, the actor Dylan who plays Ricky's character was going to sort of become a star, touring as a professional dancer, while, Damon Richards, played by Ryan Jamal Swain, is going to be, sort of frustrated as he's going to dance school and he wants to break out and be a
star. And we see that happening. Right.
We're starting to see that, so we'll see what happens with that.
All about Eve.
Once more time. It's certainly a wonderful show, and Vivacious, I love kicking with you about all of this stuff, because, you have such a life history in that community, and you're friends with so many of these amazing entertainers and actors.
Yeah, it's an honor to see people who you've known since the day you've been out, When I first walked in the club scene and met all those people back then, to now see them on TV.
And Billy Porter is a national treasure. I don't want to compare him to other people, but I was getting sick of seeing Neil Patrick Harris doing everything. And so I say Broadway and Hollywood has to have Billy Porter host the next Oscars.
Well,
wouldn't that be good?
Well, as long as he promises not to cuss a storm up. Did you see the other day there was an award show happening and they asked him to sing a piece from Gypsy during a commercial break, and he turned it out and he got a standing ovation of 6,000 people. He is the real deal. And he said it before. He goes, how you see Billy Porter speak and act in real life, that's how he's been for 30 years inside that industry. And they didn't want to deal with him because he was too loud and too black. And he's never apologized for who he is. He did Kinky Boots, and that role just fit him so perfectly because they needed somebody with that effervescence and that vivaciousness to him. And so it's now started to land him all these other roles, and now he's got Pose in the process, and now he's on talk shows, he got to be on The View, think about how he dispelled the myth of you know, men trying to say that a woman wearing dress is something weak and bad, and how he just took the strength into that. You know, they are changing the dialogue. And I know there's a lot of Christian folks out there, you know, they want to rage against it and be like, blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, I believe that a lot of these Christians who think that they're going to go to heaven because they think that it was their God-given duty to ostracize and comfort the gays, they're going to get to that pearly gate and realize that instead of taking the escalator up, they're taking the escalator down, because they have failed as human beings under the guise of God and put in words in the mouth of God to kill us, to have negative things said about us. And he's going to be like, you were so caught up in your own chicken ranch sauce, you forgot to eat the chicken pure.
What do you make HBO, Hot Bottoms Only, Horny Bottoms Only, airing the documentary Wig that Neil Patrick Harris helped produce? And it has some great interviews with some of New York City's legends, and features a brown-haired Lady Bunny. They're showing footage of Lady Bunny when in her earliest days.
Wow.
And it's quite astounding. It's on HBO. You can watch clips of it on YouTube, but
I haven't seen it yet.
We haven't been able to see it. Yeah.
I haven't been able to see it, but you have to understand something. From the first day I walked into New York City, I have always been pro anything Bunny. Bunny could fart and I will pick up a sign and support it. So
you will inhale it.
No, I didn't say I go that far. It might be pheromones, but I'm not that crazy. You know, you have to understand, Bunny has always been a huge pillar in this community, not just in New York, but globally in terms of what she stands for.
Oh, yeah, she's huge.
And anything, and don't talk about her. How dare you, Mark? You know, and so anything that she does, I'm going to be there 100% to support it. It's just like every time she has a show in New York, I'm the first one to be like, girl, I'm showing up tonight, just so you know.
Oh, yeah.
Because I like to support my Bunny on everything and everything that she does. You know, so I'm happy that she's getting some recognition, you know, because Bunny doesn't do a slow and steady race, but mm-hmm. she gets the race authentically done right, which is different from some of the counterparts or, you know, a counter view of what we're seeing. But, you know, I always say that Bunny's actually a black person in a white person's body. That bitch has rhythm like nobody else. If you ever literally take the time to sit down and actually hear Bunny sing, you're like, she's got some chops on her.
She certainly had plenty of black dick and Latino dick inside her.
Well, she's always credited all her talents to the amount of Spanish foreskins she's had, you know, that she's worn as a face bikini, you know. But she is a very talented person. And the thing that I like about Bunny is when she puts her stamp on something, Bunny doesn't do it from a specific race, specific presentation. She shows the full wide range in its authenticity. She doesn't just take her white friends with her. She takes everybody along. And that's one of the reasons why I love Bunny, because she is the ultimate group chat room where everybody's invited.
Jake Shears of the Scissor Sisters confirmed a theory that we've been positioning on this podcast for a while, that the success of the Scissor Sisters song Let's Have a Kiki, which most of their songs are normally written by Jake Shears and a songwriting partner, this was written by Animatronic, and the success of that song fucked with all their heads and broke up the band. And he says, absolutely, that's what happened. Thank you, Fausto. I apologize for not coming on the podcast.
Because we've been saying that for years. We're like, oh my God, this hit. And then you didn't hear anything. You're like,
well, we got some insider information that confirmed that theory, but mm-hmm. that we couldn't put out forward.
So
basically, that you know, Animatronic was the woman and the one woman in the band, and she, you know, usually they don't let the woman speak. They just have her as a prop, even though she's the one who put the band together. And
no, she's not the one that put the band together.
She was very much a driving force. No, Scissor Sisters.
They started the band, and then she moved from San Francisco to New York. And within 3 weeks of moving to New York, he came up to her and said, "Hey, do you want to be in my band?" She's like, "Sure." At least that's what Heclina told us. And she's like, she had the easiest like road
she just showed up
that ever happened. Yeah.
But it was her driving her appearance in the band. And you can see what Animatronic brought to the group because Let's Have a Kiki went to number one. Mm-hmm. And since then, they're all like, we don't know what to do next because it fucked with their heads. Mm-hmm.
Well, he was quoted as saying, because I don't know what the fuck to say after that song, quite honestly. When that song came out and did what it did, the song hit number one on the Billboard dance charts, I was like, well, there it is. I guess we did it. I truly had no idea what to follow up with that. So I
I think, I don't know anything really about the SZA sisters, but I think that if they were a real part of like LGBT nightlife, that they would have had more ammunition to flow with afterwards. Because let's look at Tadric Hall. He's done a few tracks in the past, and just when you thought he couldn't find any more faggot in him to be a faggot, he just came out with Ear Hit Feel, you know. And it's like, bitch, you just gave us the song we needed for Pride season. Thank you. You know, so, you know, sometimes some people, you know, they come upon something that works for them, which happened to the SZA sisters, with Let's Have a Kiki. And they, at the time, they were actually hanging out with a lot of the subversives of New York City LGBT scene.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that in a sense, when you make it big, when you're busy chasing the dream of being a superstar, that it's more important than ever to stay in touch with your friends, with your community, because that's where new ideas, new styles, new songs are going to come from.
Yeah. Yes, because, you know, like, for instance, I personally believe that if I hang out more with my friend Calvin, even though I haven't hung out with him in years, he brings out a fiercer side of a queen in me. And when it does come out, they're like, oh, bitch. They've like, you know, when I hang out with certain people, they're like, we completely forget how more shadier than us you really are when you get rolling. They're like Vivacious always acts so proper, but they're like, bitch, I thought I was a faggot. That bitch is a mega faggot when it comes to shade.
You need your think pink tank, and if you cut away from your community and friends, you lose your identity
and a part of your soul. It's true. It's 100%.
Believe me, I have plenty of guests on this podcast who made it big, and their careers have grown stale. Why? Because they don't talk to us. They don't talk to their friends. They cut off all the things because they're too busy eating French cuisine and shopping at Louis Vuitton and going to the French Riviera. And they're like, I wonder what the little people are doing today. Oh, well.
Yes, I believe that you should always keep your ear to the ground, and because also keeping your ear to the ground also keeps you humble.
But more, I think it's what life is about. It's forming relationships with people. And if you're not into somebody, don't, you know, feel like you have to have a relationship with somebody because you're trying to develop a career of some kind. And I've noticed a lot of people make themselves miserable because they're like trying to kiss up to a drag queen or a bar manager or an entertainer.
I was going to say that sounds like half of them musical theater kids trying to audition for Drag Race. It's like, so you're not doing drag because you love the art of drag. You're just doing it because you want to get on a TV show.
Well, and part of it, to be honest, even, you know,
and you still can't
like
perform.
When I see, you know, other drag shows sort of bringing new entertainment and new talent, it even feels like a copy of itself. You know, even the season 11 queens very much felt like a copy of previous season queens. And I don't know if that is it just that drag has run its course and there's only ways to contour your nose. Or
I'll tell you what the problem is. The minute you stop being the person who physically auditions those tapes and you start giving it to a casting company who is just a bunch of gays who have no clue what drag is, but because, and their only thing is we're trying to look for viral queens, you have destroyed and mutilated the full essence and the art of drag. You can quote me on that.
So the issue is that if you don't have 1,000, you know, people following on Instagram, there's never going to be a chance for you to go on Drag Race?
No, what I'm trying to say is this. Look for authentic drag and put those people on the show, and it doesn't matter their age, instead of trying to find TV blips that's going to get you ratings.
The do you think it's ageist to ask the contestants to reveal their ages on reality TV shows? Because I notice a lot of the competition shows do it.
It is ageist, and it's rude. You should only judge a queen by their talent.
It's like asking them what their, you know, gender identity is or their national, you know what I'm saying? Like it gets to a certain point, like it gets into private information. Yeah.
Kind of like going, I need to know what your genitalia identifies itself. I'm only going to identify you by your genitalia. You know, it needs to stop. The show for, you know, you have to understand, we're not getting to the point where, for the show to move forward and survive, it needs authenticity in terms of authentic queens who can get the job done, mm-hmm. not because somebody believed that this person will make for good TV.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, there's no shortage of web series on the internet featuring drag queens. There's Dracula's got a third season. Camp Wanakiki has got a second season. We got tons of new Cooking with Drag Queens episodes with a certain drag queen.
Dracula is a show about gory queens. We're not here for that.
No, you don't like Dracula.
Hell no, sweetie. Sweetie.
What do you not I'm like not, about Dracula?
People looking like something out of Disco Bloodbath. End of discussion. Seen it.
So you don't like the looks?
I'm not into, honey. Some of them are setting themselves with fire, got piercings. Listen, if you're going to use shock value in a gory sense just to do drag, that's your cup of tea. It's not mine. I'm here for the artistry of drag itself. I've seen queens go on stage. There's a queen in New York called Busted. Busted will find a honey.
That's a good name.
You could laugh all you want, but Busted will make any single queen on Drag Race look like a fucking fool performing next to them.
Mm. How so?
Because Busted lives up to her name of looking busted, but in the process knows how to perform the hell out of every number she gets into, to the point that even though other queens call themselves drag queens, when those tip buckets are put out and they're counting at the end of the night, Busted has walked off with all the fucking money mm-hmm. in the show.
Mm. Amen, honey.
Well, all right.
And it's about the authenticity. You know, listen, they would never put Busted on Drag Race just because Busted, hey, she wants to wear her shoes on the side of her feet tied up with duct tape. That's her look.
That's part of the reason why I appreciate a show like Pose, because it's sort of introducing us to new talent. You know, certainly Dominique Jackson, MJ Rodriguez, Angelica Ross is a, you know, acting treasure, India Moore, you know, these Billy Porter, you know, these are amazing, talented entertainers, and it's sort of thrusting them into the international stage. And to me, it's like it's just as valuable to introduce them there as it is on Drag Race.
Are we going to see the cast touring like we've seen the Drag Race girls tour?
I certainly hope so.
Are they going to be snatching up all the gigs and all the gay bars and stuff like that?
They have been touring, and I will say the Pose actors and actresses have benefited from Drag Race being around first, and I'll tell you why.
For sure.
Because they are now allowing the people from Pose to then be invited to the same clubs that they will bring the Drag Race girls to. Mm. Just so you know, in this new section that's coming up now with House of Wintour, one of the people who you see voguing is my friend Deshaun Wesley, the King of Vogue. He's a very close friend of mine, but he's also one of the fiercest voguers on the planet. And it's good to now see that they have now put him in season two of the show. I know that he had a lot to do with behind the scenes in terms of the authenticity mm. of what happens in a ballroom scene. So it's now good to see him in front of the camera. Also, in Candy's house, when they were sitting at the dinner table, if you pan slightly, when they were panning slightly to the right, moving back to Candy, there was a beautiful trans lady sitting there. And I want you to know that her name is Laomi Maldonado, otherwise known as the Wonder Woman of Bogan. And she is one of the main people who makes sure on the show itself, every time that they're filming, that the authenticity of what the voguing and what the moves are in the ballroom is being done. She has a hands-on say on all of that in while they're acting out the scenes. I've seen it with my own eyes because I was on a few of those scenes when it first started before my tours took me away from the show. Mm. Hopefully I'll get back to season three. But it's good to see Laomi. It's good to see also Deshaun Wesley, and he's in part of the House of Wintour. Mm-hmm. So let me tell you something. Those two, go look them up online, Wonder Woman and Deshaun. You will realize that Deshaun is also one of Rihanna's dancers, and he was also in Magic Mike.
Mm. Vivacious, do you like to participate in those like online trends when hashtags are trending? Do you like to like the Cinnamon Challenge, those kinds of things? Do you like to participate in those?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
You know, like when people did that ice bucket challenge, yeah, or they did the cinnamon challenge, because I have a new one.
There is a genetic function in my body that will never, ever let me do what other people are doing. For instance, all you children right out to watch Games of Thrones ain't seen only but one episode. Not interested. Mm. My body is genetically modified by I don't know who to that where everybody's running that way, I go the other way.
Well, maybe this one might appeal to you because there's a new one out there. It's called the hashtag running butthole challenge. And so what it is, let me describe it for the listeners so they understand exactly what it is. The people set up their camera and then they run towards the camera and then they just jump up in the air and like, I don't know if they're landing on a bed or where they're landing, and they're just showing people their butthole. It's the running butthole challenge.
Where are you going to post that?
On Twitter.
They're actually landing. I saw the videos, they're actually landing right on top of the camera, mm-hmm, and shutting it off fast enough. Let me tell you something. I don't have a problem with seeing a white man show me his pink ass because, bitch, I will wear you like a face bikini. How you doing? They were all pretty holes. I was like, bitch, fuck your phone, bitch. Put me down on the bed.
Man, you know what? Might be the dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Have you ever watched the movies, The Planet of the Apes?
In this case, it would be Planet of the Eight.
Of the taint.
What is
happening in China is like they're taking these macaques and in the embryos.
Monkeys.
Like they're taking the macaque monkeys and they're splicing like human DNA into them to observe what's happening and like how their brains develop and stuff. So we might get some super juiced up monkeys coming our way at season 12 of Drag Race.
Shady apes.
The Chinese have intelligent shady apes. The Chinese have always been very unethical when it comes to stuff because this is what the experiments that they're doing is stuff that has actually been told that they're not supposed to be doing in any way, shape, or form. Mm. And so normally when any scientific institutions conduct these type of experiments, the other places that give them grants to get these things done remove fundings from them, which means that these places are being conducted privately by China, mm-hmm, and is getting funded directly by the government or something, mm-hmm, because China is that country where they always want to have that extra edge over everybody else by any means necessary, not realizing that by removing ethics when it comes to these things, they could also open up a Pandora's box that could be a pandemic for the rest of the world.
Mm. Well, the monkeys that they did this to, they said that their brains weren't any bigger than regular macaques, but they developed over a longer period of time, which is more like humans, and they did do better in short-term memory tasks, and they displayed shorter reaction times than the ones that were in the wild.
Hold on a second. They did human hybrid monkeys and these things survived and grew up, mm-hmm, to be monkeys?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're monkeys.
And they're like, sir, I have a soul.
Well, they're not speaking. I don't know exactly what components they use to make it bigger, but you know.
Jeez Louise, that's terrifying.
Well, just so you know, Boston Dynamics right now as we speak, they are now streamlining their robots where they don't need that long piece of cable that's attached from the ceiling anymore to give it power to run. It now has its own self-sustaining battery pack. And the last few models that they show, the battery packs are getting skinnier and the limbs on the robots are getting skinnier to the point where within the next 10 or 20 years, they will probably most likely be showing Boston Dynamic robots inside human flesh skin that they can now weaponize and send it out to do whatever harm it needs to do on a human being, just like in the Terminator movies.
So the question is, if we're seeing sort of a convergence of robots, artificial intelligence, and entertainment, it is just a matter of time before we see a robotic drag queen, sort of like Chuck E. Cheese on steroids and estrogen, performing at a kid's birthday party.
Well, no, the Chinese have already developed robots that do strip dancing and all of that. But however, the thing that allows them to undulate and do all of that stuff, it's them standing by a mirror with a metallic piece attached to the groin area where that's giving them the power to get it done. But that's has already been out for a while.
So it'd be like robot drag race, start your computers. May the best robot win.
May the best CPU win.
This is RU Paul.
RU Paul 2.
RU Paul 2525.
I'm sorry, C3PO. You are up for elimination, but they use the voice from the Daleks instead for exterminate.
If you can't reprogram yourself, how the hell are you going to reprogram somebody else?
Someone else. Can I get a boot drive in here? Boot drive.
You know, I had a dream about that. It's like, do you ever have dreams of this? You were on Drag Race, so maybe your experience is different than most people, but it's like a lot of people, that naked at school dream that you have where you woke up naked at school. A lot of people have this dream where they're about to get eliminated on RuPaul's Drag Race. RuPaul comes into the workroom and says, "What are you working on?" It's like, "Don't worry, don't try too hard. We're sending you home."
Yeah, I think most people have that psychological problem, but that's also the reason why RuPaul, I think it's one of the reasons why the RuPaul and them also have a psychological profile where they interview the girls to make sure that, you know, they won't become suicidal after the show if they don't get far, because they need to have a stabilized brain to handle the whole concept of it.
Sure. It's a liability for them, not for the queen.
RuPaul's Drag Race is not for everyone, you know, and the sad part is, you know, RuPaul Drag Race, the show itself, does not give out any physical rules to the queens after leaving the show on what to do. They're literally left to their own devices. And if somebody doesn't intervene and give them some word of advice, it could be a nightmare for you as a queen.
What's the best advice you've been given?
Do not read the comments.
Did you read the comments anyway?
Fuck no.
Not even just a little?
I do No. I do read the comments, but for the fact that, see, the thing about Vivacious is two different human beings, and I can actually separate each one from the other completely and do the tasks that I need to do. So I can read the comment, and, you know, there's a lot of drag race girls who, when somebody is rude to them, they want to be combative and go back in and say something. You know, I could call a few names. Me, I will read the comment and be like, "Oh, girl, I'm going to show you a one-way ticket to Jesus." I click on their name. I go up to those little three dots on the side and just hit the block button. Then I go back to the comment section, hold down the comment, and put it in the garbage can. So the next time they try to call my name, she's like, "Oh, shit." There is nothing fiercer than blocking an asshole and never giving them the ability to call your name ever again.
Well, we did this video with this drag queen, Ramsey Aguilera, who is a glitter queen from Los Angeles. And I guess she's, a star in some Middle Eastern country. We're getting all this negative or very controversial comments in Arabic in her video on YouTube. And I'm like, so I have to use Google Translate to decide which ones to delete and keep.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
This Ramsey Aguilera person, is this person an American citizen?
According to her Instagram profile, she's Palestinian.
Okay. My philosophy on these people from that part of town, and this might sound like a rude thing, before you go and start doing things of freedom that you see happens in countries like Britain and America, secure the fact that you own either a green card or citizenship for that country first. Before you go and start doing freedom things like you see free countries do, make sure you have a green card or a citizenship in that country. Because if you get kicked out of this country because your visa, your school visa is up, your visiting visa, you are actually being sent back home to be killed.
I'm pretty sure that her that aspect of her life is pretty settled. It's I don't think she's in danger.
I'm just saying, yeah. Because for instance, there was this I think she was Iranian or one of these countries with them where, you know, the fatwas can be handed down. It happened to two ladies so far. One of them went to an award ceremony and wore like a sheer sequin lace outfit. And so they have literally called for her to come home so that she can face public execution, mm-hmm. and a beating and a public hearing of humiliation so they can kill her. And they're like, yes, she deserves that. And the people who were saying she deserves that were other women from her country. And I'm like, y'all a bunch of oppressed fools living underneath that regime and that idea of living by a dumbass book called the Quran.
Yeah.
You know, so, and it's happened, and it happened to this other Bollywood star. And she went out and did a few pieces, and they felt that she crossed the line in terms of what she did in one of her videos. And they told her that she needs to come home for a public beating.
Damn.
And it also said, and possible, a 25-year sentence jail time. We know for a fact that these places, you're going to jail. Mm-hmm. So before you start doing free things that you see in America and Britain, secure your fucking passport, secure your green card, stop being stupid.
Well, there's an organization, Rainbow Railroad, that helps people from dangerous parts of the world emigrate to safer parts of the world. And so they're a charity. So definitely check them out.
So Vivacious, World Pride's coming up
on Heart Island.
You're in New York City, the host of World Pride. It's the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots. The population of Manhattan's going to double.
It's already here weekend. Because a friend of mine came in from the Netherlands last night with suitcase, and he is ready to go.
What are you expecting to see? Like, what are you expecting is going to happen? What are you looking forward to?
I expect to see mass overpopulation of just everything. Because it's already happening in multiple. There's probably, as we speak, on each going day since this month of June, more than 500 minimum events that are going on towards the 50th mm-hmm. anniversary, mm-hmm. and it's an ongoing thing, you know. But when it gets to the last few days, it's going, you know, the Barclays Center, if I'm correct, is already sold out for the opening ceremony, which holds 13,000 people. So, you know, it's just going to be a mass gathering, you know, and I look forward to it because, you know, it is the 50th anniversary, and it's, you know, thank you to our ancestors who started the charge back then to have us here now, you know.
Can I get an amen up in here?
We are deeply grateful, you know, amen. And thank you for the tenacity of, you know, the ones who realize that it's not just about the on the ground fighting brick by brick to get it done. But the ones who did the higher, you know, some people play checkers and some people play chess. You know, thank God for the ones that also play chess. So, you know, sometimes, you know, somebody the other day goes, Pride has become a business opportunist movement. I'm like, sweetie, straight people who decide to form organizations and put money in there to kill gay people is also a business opportunist moment. So Pride needs to be tit for tat with the same thing that they're doing. Oh, I liked it when it was free. Bitch, fuck your free, and we're not in that era anymore. For the fact that the vice president of this country and the president of this country and many other people in power that are politicians can attend anti-LGBT movements and garner money, and for the fact that they want to create a Christian moral natural law set of people that's going to be dictating what we can and can't do. Yes, bitch, take every freaking penny that we get from allies and use that to fight them head on, because it takes money to get this fight done. Free don't pay the fight.
Mm-hmm. Amen, sister. Vivacious, thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you so much for your friendship. I absolutely adore you, and I think the world's a better place.
You said I'm from Heart Island. We're over.
I didn't say you're from Heart Island. You're from Jamaica.
You're performing at Heart Island.
You live on Manhattan, which is an island, right? You're up in Harlem, and then you're opening the World Pride on Heart Island. You know.
Okay, we get the joke.
It was funnier last night when we said it.
It was funnier because it was like...
It was fresh and you were like... You gave me the Dominique Steven. Jackson seething Steven. Read.
Mm. So, I also like the fact that Dominique has now let in flip tables and pulling tablecloths. So she goes, this is my new thing. I was like, bitch.
I will gut you like the fish you'll never be.
So to all the gays out there, I implore you, please do not do what Elektra's doing and start pulling tablecloths off tables because you disagree.
Mm. Yeah, that's fun to watch on television. In real life, you're like, God damn, I was going to eat that.
Let's just get along.
No, yeah. Honey, it's called You Will Get the Fierce Ass Whipping. Miss Elektra was able to walk out the scene and cut. You will not, there will not be, Ryan Murphy will not help you to stop the scene after the whole family come and whip your ass for pulling that table asunder. Mm. So keep it cute and no shenanigans. Mm-hmm. Jesus loves you. Mm-hmm. But yes, thank you so much for having me today. It's a pleasure to always speak with the both of you, even though one of you are from Gilligan's Island and the other one is from Heart Island. This has been lots of fun.
Thank you, Vivacious.
You're very welcome. I love you.
Mm-hmm. Vivacious lives in Heart Island.
On Heart Island.
On Heart Island. You can find her living in a pine box.
Yes, she's actually right next to Shady Street and Shady Avenue in the pine box that Mark is in also.
You can see a lot Feast of Fun live on Heart Island. Hey guys, we want to remind you that Feast of Fun is made possible because of the generous support of fierce, fabulous people like you. We couldn't do this podcast without your support. If you've been listening for quite some time, consider becoming a member. Membership does have its privileges. Mm-hmm. At feastoffun.com/plus or follow us on Patreon. For just $1, you can gain access to all kinds of secret little goodies that we have waiting for you guys. That's patreon.com/feastoffun. Can I get an amen up in here from Vivacious?
Hello.
And Vivacious, people, if they want to book you and get those Ornatia heads, you have a Pride Natia for sale now.
Instagram.
Yes, I'm doing Pride Natia in honor of the 50th anniversary of Pride. As a matter of fact, I'm sending a few of them to Brazil tomorrow.
Girl. Ooh.
Yes, Miss Dean.
International.
So if you want to get those, just send a message to vivaciousofficial@gmail.com and tell me what country or what state you're in. And there's a price for each one because to send something is based on weight and distance.
Mm-hmm.
Get your Ornatia heads.
And it's get hard to get that Ornatia mail heads. Service out at Heart Island because they got to take a boat.
Yes, bitch, and you need to have a golden penny to give to Sharon, the gatekeeper that travels you across the water to go and visit Mark on Heart Island.
And don't pay the ferryman until he gets you to the other side.
Don't pay. Stupid.
You remember that song, right?
Queen, you need a look.
No, I just remember that Lady Bunny Houston date the ferryman.
Don't pay the ferryman until he gets you to the other side.
That's from the 80s, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. That was from.
I think it was Coco Peru who used to ride the ferry.
She lived on City Island. She grew up on City Island.
Right next to Heart Island.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
She used to look out at Heart Island and be like, I'll be there someday. Someday. But not today.
Not today, Satan.
Not today. Thank you, Vivacious.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast. We love you. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye.